This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is a globalist? Because Trump spoke at the United Nations today, and it was wonderful. He said a couple things that are great. And you know I don't do that often. How often do we come on here on I'm Right and do that? Wow, Trump's so great. I think it's so boring and lame. We don't do that a lot. But he spoke today, and it was really wonderful. But before we get to that, a globalist, what does that actually mean? Well, nations, your nation, my nation, whatever nation you're watching me from right now, that nation has an obligation for you, to you. You have an obligation to it, and it has an obligation to you. That's how it's supposed to work. You're going to be a good citizen. You're going to follow the law. You're going to pay your taxes if you desire. You serve in the military, whatever it may be. These are obligations you have. But the obligations go both ways. The nation has an obligation to worry about your interests, first and foremost. Your interests. France, the French government, they have an obligation to put the French people first and foremost. American government, American people. You get the idea. That's how it's supposed to work. That's how historically it has worked. But something has happened in recent years, and it's been unbelievably damaging to Western civilization, to the entire planet itself. Globalism has come in. Many people have spoken about globalism for a very long time, but in its simplest form, here's what it is. The people who run these countries now, the major Western countries, they don't see themselves as protectors of that country, as servants of that country. They see themselves as global citizens who together should rule the entire planet. That's how they see themselves. So instead of worrying about serving you, protecting you, they worry about each other. They serve and protect each other. They have these big meetings where they come up with grand plans. The actual interests of their specific nation and their specific citizen couldn't possibly matter less. Never even enters their mind. They're all in this for each other, the globalists. Most of these people are driven by some form of communist ideology, which, of course, communism and globalism are one and the same. Communism was always supposed to be for the entire planet, but that's another matter. The United Nations is one of the greatest examples of what I just said. They come together, they meet, and instead of figuring out how to best serve the people in their countries, they figure out how to crap all over their countries. They figure out how to grab large parts of the third world and import it. And when they're supposed to do things like keep the peace, they don't do that very well at all. In fact, Trump, it's so refreshing to have somebody speak like this at the UN. Trump basically said, what would you say you do here?
I ended 7 wars, dealt with the leaders of each and every one of these countries, and never even received a phone call from the United Nations offering to help in finalizing the deal. All I got from the United Nations was an escalator that on the way up stopped right in the middle. If the First Lady wasn't in great shape, she would have fallen. But she's in great shape. We're both in good shape. We both stood. And then a teleprompter that didn't work. What is the purpose of the United Nations? The UN has such tremendous potential. I've always said it. It has such tremendous, tremendous potential, but it's not even coming close to living up to that potential. For the most part, at least for now, all they seem to do is write a really strongly worded letter and then never follow that letter up. It's empty words, and empty words don't solve war. The only thing that solves war and wars is action.
It is so refreshing to hear an American president speak like that, especially because we all understand now, we get it, that when a Democrat becomes president, and let's be honest, a lots of Republicans, when they become president, the first thing they try to do is get themselves in with that group of globalists. Not prioritizing you. They try to become part of the in crowd. How many other presidents have you seen stand up in front of the United Nations and speak boldly like that? Looking them right in the eye, standing in the UN saying, "What do you even do?" It's amazing. It's wonderful to watch because these are soulless, evil people who have done the worst things in the world, and they deserve to be called out and embarrassed like that right to their face. And speaking of soulless and evil, what is a central part of the globalist communist plan? We've talked about it endlessly on this show. What's the most important part of their plan by far? The most important part of their plan is mass migration of hostile foreigners. Why? This is something we've talked about extensively. Why is that their thing? I've had people email me, "Jesse, I don't understand. Why does the same thing take place in the UK as takes place in Germany, as took place in America under Biden?" I said, why are they all doing the same thing? Why are there mass numbers of foreigners being imported seemingly as fast as humanly possible? Why is that a thing? You must understand why that's a thing. You have to get it through your head. You know how these people are a group? We just talked about that. They all get together and they talk about each other, how to serve each other, all these things. Do you know what worries them? Do you know their chief enemy in their mind? Do you know who it is? You. Me. Patriotic citizens who don't want to be global citizens, who don't want to be crushed. We don't want to go in green this or garbage that. We don't want these things. Patriotic citizens who love their country are the greatest threat, the greatest enemy in the minds of virtually everybody who sits in that room. So what to do? What to do? What do we do about these Americans who love America? What do we do about these Germans who love Germany? These frogmen who love France? What do we do? Well, let's get some new people in here. If we have a big crop of people who love the country, and they're the only thing holding us back from taking total power, if we can't kill the patriots, why don't we just replace the patriots? It's a plan. It's the central part of the plan. It's why you see Democrats protecting every illegal as fast and hard as they possibly can in the United States right now from deportation. They understand that illegal being here is everything to them. Donald Trump stood in front of the United Nations and called them all out for it.
Not only is the UN not solving the problems it should too often, it's actually creating new problems for us to solve. The best example is the number one political issue of our time, the crisis of uncontrolled migration. It's uncontrolled. Your countries are being ruined. The United Nations is funding an assault on Western countries and their borders. The UN is supposed to stop invasions, not create them, and not finance them. Europe is in serious trouble. They've been invaded by a force of illegal aliens like nobody's ever seen before. And because they choose to be politically correct, they're doing just absolutely nothing about it.
He's right. And of course, it's worse than that. It's not that they're doing nothing about it. It's what they want. Don't think for a moment that the ruining of America, of Europe, is some byproduct, some accident of naivete or soft on illegal immigration policies or just misplaced compassion. Don't think for a moment that's what it is. It is very, very evil. It is very, very focused, and it is done on purpose. I want to go ahead and reinforce this to you again as we get ready to wrap this up here, that the mass importation of foreigners is everything to them. And when a foreigner comes here and takes your job and rapes your daughter and kills your family on the highway, Democrats and these foreign communists as well are not sorry even a little bit. They don't feel bad. They don't shed a tear. They don't look in the mirror and say to themselves, "Wow, maybe we shouldn't have done that." It's a central part of the plan. And to make an omelet, you gotta break some eggs. They want a prison gang from Venezuela to come replace you. You know why? because you love your country, will fight for your country, and you will fight against the people trying to ruin it. The prison gang from Venezuela can be bought for a $500 Visa card and a nice hotel in New York City, courtesy of the American taxpayer. He's what you call a cheap date. You demand things from your politicians. You expect things from your government. And in the minds of these people, that makes you the enemy. And I do love that every time Donald Trump takes to the podium, he flat out tells people now, you're not welcome here.
Our message is very simple. If you come illegally into the United States, you're going to jail, or you're going back to where you came from, or perhaps even further than that. You know what that means?
I love that. I love that we're deporting illegals to Africa. They're not even from Africa. Hey, best of luck. We're sending them to Syria. Don't come here or it will be hurt. Such a difference when you change who the president is. So again, we don't do this a lot, you know, big Trump slobber fest, but credit to Donald Trump today. It was a wonderful speech. He's doing the right thing. A lot of the right things. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. 20% increase in your testosterone in 90 days. That sounds like something you would hear from the local tea clinic. I know you have one. There's one every 5 feet around here. But what does that mean? Well, there, you're going to get a needle jammed in your arm. Do you think you should do that? I'm talking about natural herbal supplements. Clinically tested. 20% increase in your T levels in 90 days. You are going to have so much more energy than you have now without a needle in your arm. Your brain is going to work better. Your mood is going to be better, all without a needle in your arm. Natural herbal supplements, a male vitality stack from Chalk, will change your entire life. Ladies, you are not forgotten. They have female vitality stacks for you. Do you want to be full of pep at the end of the day, ready to go instead of dragging your butt through the kitchen? Chalk.com/JesseTV. Okay, Dome is back. Kamala Harris has returned, and I'm so happy. Let me explain. I've missed her. I got a certain joy every day of mocking that moron. It's just something that brought great joy to my life, and since she's been gone, you know, drinking boxed wine in Napa Valley, I haven't been able to enjoy it at all. And now she's on this book tour. And I'm going to tell you right now, we're going to play one or two things, whatever I get to, of her little clips. But there are going to be more in the coming days. She's on a book tour. And let's talk about the book tour thing for a moment. The book industry, the book political connection, it's really bad. I'm not sure how we solve this problem, but it's really bad. So let me explain how it works. A lot of these politicians, you look at them and you look at their income and you think to yourself, how did they become a millionaire? How'd that happen? How's Bernie Sanders worth $3 million? How? Well, lots of times we say, well, they're corrupt. They are, but not necessarily in the way we think. That money oftentimes comes from book deals. Okay, well, you can understand that. I can understand that. Surely a lot of people want to buy these books. So I'm going to show you something right here. It's a total shameless plug, but I'm actually not trying to sell it to you. I wrote one book. It is the Anti-Communist Manifesto. All right, one book. Now, to my surprise, it killed. It was on several bestseller lists. In the month of July when it came out, it was the number one political book in the United States of America. Number one. I didn't hardly make anything. Hardly anything at all. So how is it that Bernie Sanders, and I'm sure Kamala Harris, how is it all these politicians make all this money on books? Here's how it works. You write a book. We would have to bank on people buying the books. But if you're a card-carrying member of the system, if you've been a loyal communist, you don't have to bank on the people buying these books. Who cares what Dome has to say about anything? Nobody cares. No one cares. No one's interested in this woman at all. But there are communist institutions across the United States of America who will mass produce, or mass purchase, I should say, mass purchase your books, thus bringing you large quantities of money. What do they do with the books? They throw them away. They stack them in a room somewhere. No one actually reads them. But, you know, Dirty Commie Institute says, I need 50,000 copies of it. In the end, it's a way to legally, this is what's sad, it's legal, to legally drop a boatload of money in a politician's bank account. And Democrat after Democrat after Democrat has done this time and time and time again. It is such a pervasive problem that, you know how I just told you my book was on the bestseller list, bunch bestseller lists? They have little annotations on the bestseller list for people who had institutions buy their books en masse. That's how common of a problem it is. Dirty Commie Institute will come by 50,000 copies. The end result, of course, is they want Kamala Harris's bank account to be nice and fat because she stole a bunch of your money and found ways to give it back to these filthy organizations. But let's focus right now on something hilarious Dome said. There's a thing, there are things that are known that kind of everybody knows, but only a few people are willing to actually voice. Gay people in the black community. The black community has traditionally, it's kind of changing now, which is good, but has traditionally been hardcore Democrat. You know, Barack Obama's getting 92-93% of the black vote. It's been a traditional hardcore Democrat demographic. But they're really not big on the whole gay thing. When I say not big on it, they absolutely despise it. They reject it outright. And Dome, when she was given the nomination, had a choice to make. She had to go out and choose a VP. Hey, Dome, why didn't you pick Mayor Pete?
You say in the book really bluntly that your personal first choice for your running mate would have been Pete Buttigieg, and you praise him effusively. You say he would have been an ideal partner if I were a straight man. And you say effectively that demographically it was too much to ask of the American people to ask them to elect you with him as your running mate. To say that he couldn't be on the ticket effectively because he was gay, it's hard to hear.
No, that's not what I said. That he couldn't be on the ticket because he is gay. My point, as I write in the book, is that I was clear that in 107 days, in one of the most hotly contested elections for president of the United States, against someone like Donald Trump, who knows no floor, to be a black woman running for president of the United States and as a vice presidential running mate, a gay man, with the stakes being so high, it made me very sad, but I also realized it would be a real risk. Maybe I was being too cautious. You know, I'll let our friends, we should all talk about that. Maybe I was. But that's the decision I made.
To watch her try to not say it, but also say it. Well, not saying it. No, it's not. I didn't say it's because he was gay. It's just that it was too risky to choose him. And of course, they'll never just come right out and be honest about why. Why? Hey, get down to the nitty gritty, Dome. What is it? What particular group would reject such a choice, Dome? I am curious. But she's just so terrible at it. And this is part of what gives me such joy, is these people are such disgusting, despicable liars. They can never just come out and be honest about anything at all. It's not hard to say. It's not hard to come out and say, I didn't pick Pete Buttigieg because he's gayer than a $3 bill and because the black community completely rejects that kind of thing and I wouldn't have been able to get enough of the black vote and it would have cost me the election. That's not a difficult thing to say. It's true. Everyone else knows it, but they can't. So they have to kind of try to dance. I love my cell phone company. You know what I like? Here's what I like. I like never having to worry that a company I patronize is going to take my money and use it against me. Because it's a concern everywhere. You know that, right? When you go buy a new car, you know you're going to have an LGBTQ ad the next day and you're going to think, well, I paid for that ad. You know it's coming in this crappy corporate environment we have. I never have to check on Pure Talk. I never have to pull up their social media. Oh, I hope it's not Pride Month for them. Pure Talk cares about America. They hire Americans. Their CEO did 2 tours in Vietnam. They charge you way less for your cell phone service. You can keep your phone. You can keep your number. And more importantly, you can patronize a business that loves this country. When they give back, they get veterans back on their feet. They give out American flags at Independence Day. My kind of company. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. Go. Switch today.
And we're going to look into Soros because I think it's a RICO case against him and other people. Because this is more than like protests. This is real agitation. This is riots on the street.
Well, that sounds wonderful. If Pam Bondi can follow through and if we're dealing with legitimate illegalities here. There's a lot of ifs. Parker Thayer knows a lot more about this stuff than I do. Joining me now, investigative researcher with Capital Research. Okay, Parker, I hate George Soros and the people who fund this stuff as much as anybody under the sun, but I also know he probably has $2,000 an hour attorneys that have worked very, very hard to make sure things are above board in whatever way they do it. Give us the skinny on how legit all this stuff is.
I would say $2,000 an hour is probably on the low side for his lawyers. I think we're probably talking about much more than that. One of my colleagues recently, Ryan Morrow, has put out a report detailing $80 million that the Soros Network has given to groups either directly advocating for terrorism or directly supporting terrorism, both in the U.S. and abroad. One of the trends I love that he noticed amidst all these groups, particularly the ones operating in the U.S., is they like to call it direct action. They say we're organizing direct action, we're giving out guides for direct action, which the action happens to be violence, which just because you call it direct action doesn't make it not terrorism, but they seem to think that's the case. So I would say that there's absolutely a lot of angles to look into as Soros-related organizations for funding groups advocating violence, advocating direct action, which is just another fancy word for terrorism in most cases. RICO, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I couldn't tell you whether RICO charges would stick in this case. But there absolutely is an angle to investigate there. And there are lots of other ones as well.
Okay, what other ones? Soros, we all know.
Sure. There's lots of possible campaign finance violations surrounding the Soros DA networks that should all be looked into. He has a long record of PACs popping up in states, getting $1 million, supporting a district attorney, and then disappearing. And then months later, you find out that there were all kinds of campaign finance violations that occurred. So all of those should be looked into. But also Alex Soros, he has a good friend of his, is the former leader of Albania, possibly current, I can't remember. But the former leader for Albania, Secretary Blinken, or former Secretary of State Blinken, thank goodness, sanctioned the leader of the Albanian opposition party. Alex Soros is so close with Mr. Rama, was his name, the Prime Minister of Albania. He visited him at least a dozen times. Mr. Rama was in his recent wedding to Huma Abedin. And there's zero chance in my mind, and many others have, with more experience with FARA legislation, Foreign Agent Registration Act, have said that Alex Soros and his network should be looked into for FARA violations regarding his closeness with the narco despot of Albania. So there's lots of potential options to look into his network.
Okay. Can you explain in your own words, Parker, having looked into this extensively, how many different cutout groups are we talking about here? How many layers between George Soros pulling out his checkbook and striking a check and it actually getting to some scumbag throwing bricks at people?
It would be dozens, maybe hundreds. These are a lot of the thing about Antifa and the rioters. Rioting is cheap, folks. You and 10 friends could accomplish what Antifa accomplishes with the contents of your garage, and you'd probably be better at it. Antifa is not cheap, and it's not expensive, and it's very decentralized. So the organizations providing institutional cover and advice to these rioters, those are the ones that we could actually potentially get on violations of the law and conspiring with the rioters. But in terms of actual funding for the rioters, most likely it's disability checks and, daddy's trust fund that's funding these rioters. It's George Soros is a step removed from all of that, probably intentionally so. But there are many layers to this, and they should be investigated regardless of whether there is a lot of money being moved here or not.
Parker, okay, Donald Trump put out a social media post expressing some frustration with Pam Bondi, if you will. And look, I have my concerns, I have my frustrations as well, but the truth is that it's up to her and her Department of Justice to take apart this entire network. From what you've seen, is she capable of it?
I really wouldn't know. I know that there has been for many months a letter sitting with her office signed by almost every member of the Michigan House of Representatives on the Republican side asking her to investigate voter registration groups that are committing, in my opinion, demonstrable violations of tax law. And I haven't heard any follow-up on that. So there's lots more that could be done. That much I know.
Parker, something that you've been doing, which I love, near and dear to my heart, is you've been compiling a trophy case of these demons who went on social media and celebrated the assassination of a 31-year-old husband and father. Tell us about these people.
The teachers. That was the over... I compiled a trophy case at the start of this. I noticed people getting fired, and I decided someone should really keep track of those. So I made a thread. It's pinned at the top of my Twitter now. I stopped counting after we hit 100 people fired for saying the most horrendous, heinous things I think I've ever seen anybody say about a person, living or dead. And I stopped counting at 100. Number 101 is being saved specially for when he's finally executed. But I stopped counting before Jimmy Kimmel even got fired. The people who are doing this mostly, though, teachers, government employees, people who work in sectors that are supposed to be helping people. It's a crisis of toxic compassion, toxic empathy, that they've talked themselves into saying horrible things because they think they're morally superior to everybody else. That's the trend I've noticed.
Parker, I'm glad you brought up people who should be helping others, serving others, because obviously teachers is horrific. That's a big problem. I'm not going to downplay that problem, but nurses are more surprising to me, and maybe I'm just 44 going on 84, but when I picture a nurse, I picture some, kind woman who's here to change your bedpan and give you a Tylenol. But apparently this profession is full of a bunch of demons who dance on TikTok when people get slaughtered. What do you make of that?
I think it's an indictment of the university system. I mean, the entire medical industry has enormous barriers to entry. There's all kinds of requirements for licensing. You have to have all kinds of advanced degrees to get into anything related to medicine. And the university system has been taken over by these people, as we very well know. And I think you're seeing the fruits of that. They live in an echo chamber so intense they can't even consider the possibility that they shouldn't post things like Charlie Kirk deserved it under their real legal name with their employer in their bio. That's insane.
It is insane. And actually, that was my final question to you. The level of comfort they have with not only thinking it, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'm a terrible person. And I've had people die in this world. And I thought to myself, we're better off. It would never even occur to me to say it. I wouldn't say it to a friend. I certainly wouldn't post it publicly. You don't have anything nice to say after someone dies. You simply keep quiet about that. That's just understood. Yet there's a lot of these people completely comfortable posting the most vile crap. Why?
I mean, it gets back to what we started this conversation with Antifa. I mean, it's that sort of the vile behavior is acceptable and has been considered acceptable against the right people, meaning anyone to the right of Al Gore, for about a decade now. And they're finally being taught that that is no longer acceptable. There's been an awakening of decency in this country like we haven't seen in a very long time. And I think, being pulled out of the echo chamber is happening sometimes very abruptly for them. And they're starting to wake up to how radical they've become without noticing over the years.
Parker, Keep stacking up those trophies for me, brother. I appreciate you very much. Come back soon. You know what we have behind our stove? Probably the exact same thing you have behind your stove. Salt, pepper, olive oil. It's every kitchen you go into. Salt, pepper, olive oil. But here's the problem. We just grab a bottle of olive oil from the grocery store. That's all I've ever done. I'm 44. That's all I've ever done for about 43 years of my life. You go down the grocery aisle. When you're out, you only wait until you're out, right? Because it never goes bad. Have you thought about that? Have you ever looked at the date on the olive oil sitting behind your stove? When you buy it, it's old. Months old. Sometimes years old. Go to farmfresh246.com. Get one bottle. It's free. By the way, it's free. You pay like a buck to cover the shipping. Get one bottle. What is it? It's fresh from a farm. It's so much more flavorful. You've been eating bland olive oil and had no idea. Farmfresh246.com.
You have no idea the dragon you have awakened. You have no idea how determined we will be to save this civilization, to save the West, to save this republic. Because our children are strong, and our grandchildren will be strong, and our children's children's children will be strong. And what will you leave behind? Nothing. Nothing. To our enemies, you have nothing to give, you have nothing to offer, you have nothing to share but bitterness. We have beauty, we have light, we have goodness. We will finish the job. We will defeat the forces of darkness and evil, and we will stand every day for what is true, what is beautiful, what is good.
It was such a wonderful memorial. Please go watch it. And there was everything in it. Worship, pastors, little fire and brimstone from Stephen Miller. Joining me now, host of the Politics by Faith podcast, which I so adore, my friend Mike Slater. Mike, the true, the beautiful, and the good. These are things you talk about often on your podcast. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, we need more fire and brimstone too, Jesse. So thank you for always bringing the heat as well. back, ancient stuff here. The good, the beautiful, and the true. That's what we believe in. That's what Stephen Miller was referring to right there. This is what conservatives, this is who we are at our core, down to our bones. But Satan, over these last few decades, in his wily, crafty way that he always does, he came in, he said, did God really say that? So we have these three great lies of our era, Jesse, that counter the good, the beautiful, and the true. So we say that something is good, and the left will say, well, who are you to say? Who are you to say what's good? Who do you say what's bad? There's no such thing. We say something is beautiful, objectively beautiful, and they say, ah, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And then we say that something is true, and they've come back with, no, that's my truth. That's the lies that our kids are fed on a daily basis from as young of an age as possible. If I may, I'd like to throw in there evolution as well, this belief of evolution, which does two things. First, at its origin, denies the existence of the creator. And then at the end, says we're all here randomly, like something came from nothing, and an amoeba turned into a frog, turned into a monkey, turned into a human, and we're all just like chemicals in our brain, and there are no, like nothing really exists, and it's just like random floating nothingness. And all of this together leads to nihilism, the belief in nothing, that nothing matters, nothing exists, and nothing good, beautiful, or true, who are you to say, etc. And that's the nihilism that so many kids have been seeped in, and it manifests in a lot of different ways. Sleeping around, a lot of drug use, crap music, whatever. There's lots of different manifestations of it. And one of them is political assassinations. And that's what we saw the other day. And now is the time that we're like finally done with this. We can finally call this out. Jesse, I don't know if you've ever seen this. I have never seen the gospel proclaimed more in a 5-hour period in my entire life combined. There are churches. There are famous pastors at churches, I'm putting air quotes here if everyone can see, that have never proclaimed the gospel like what we saw last night. But when you unleash our politicians like Marco Rubio, like what? You unleash the Secretary of War, the Secretary of State, the Health and Human Services, Director of National Intelligence, the Vice President of the United States. You unleash these guys from political correctness, and the Holy Spirit just led them to proclaim the gospel like I've never heard before in my entire life. So the darkness is done, and it's time for the light to shine.
Mike, we'll actually get back to the light in a moment, because you're right. I've never seen anything like it. I talked about it in the opening. It was just so beyond wonderful in every way. I want to go back to the political assassination part. How does, you know, how do we get there? In the minds of evil people, in the minds of demonic forces, how do you go from, hey, evolution, the concepts like that, to I'm going to go kill my political opponent? Because normal people, Mike, really struggle with how anybody could be that broken and evil. What happened?
That's such a great question. We did a segment the other day on my show where we went through a bunch of different school shooters. And we went to Columbine, and we went even before that. And then we went all the way to the Covington Catholic school shooting near my house, actually, here in Nashville. And they all share this thread of nihilism, that I decide what's good. I decide what's evil. But you think that's evil? No. I think it's good. I'm the one who decides. It's all, I'm better than God. There is no truth, right? There is no big truth. There's no God who tells me what to do. I say what's real and what's not real. You throw in there the transgenderism, Jesse, and I don't want to skip past that. That was like a very short abbreviation of that, but it's Satan. Like, Satan was prideful. He thought he was greater than God, and God cast him down, right? And that's what all these people, they believe in this nihilistic worldview, which says, I decide, I know what's best, no one can tell me what's wrong. But now how it gets to a murderous thing, I'll throw in the transgender part. Transgenderism in its nature denies reality. We see it with the dead naming concept. You detach yourself from yourself, from your own humanity, from your name even, from your God-given name, your God-given gender. You so detach yourself from all that, and then also your humanity. And once you can do that, and the whole world has betrayed you in such a horrific way, you are going to be so filled with resentment and anger and all these horrible, horrible emotions. You're going to feel more alone and isolated than ever before. And because you're now totally disconnected from your humanity, you've butchered your body, right, in horrible, irredeemable ways. You've denied your own humanity. It's not a very far step to deny other people's humanity either. And to be so full of hate that you just need to take everything and everyone down with you on your way out. It's dark stuff, Jesse. But listen, you're a scholar. You understand the history of evil and wickedness. And when you do, you see these jumps. They're not that big of jumps, actually. But if you live in like La La Land, where everything's great, everything's fine all the time, then it's like, oh, it's shocking. You and I are never shocked when this stuff happens. My only shock is it doesn't happen more often. That's God's mercy.
Mike, for those who do not believe, it can also, on the flip side, on the wonderful side of this coin, for those who do not believe, it can be confusing how a 31-year-old wonderful young man, husband, father, gets gunned down. Everyone watched the video. Everyone saw it in broad daylight. And the response to that was, look, there were 100,000 people in the place. 100 million watched it. 100 million people singing worship songs, his wife forgiving the killer in front of everybody. Can you please explain how, shouldn't it have all been anger and sadness and weeping and everything sucks? Why was yesterday this gigantic, inspiring moment?
Yeah, what a good question. All right, so the crucible reveals who you really are. If you're a wicked, rotten, down to the core person, and you've never repented from your sins, you are squeezed through a crucible and evil, wicked things come out. Resentment, anger, bitterness, blaming, etc. If you are filled with the Holy Spirit and you are put through the crucible of life, Christ comes out. Goodness. Roger Scruton writes often about the inherentness of leftists, and the inherentness inside of a leftist is to hate and destroy. The inherent nature of, if I may, a conservative, a Christian conservative certainly, the inherent nature is to build and love. And that's what we saw. We were put through an incredible crucible. One of our guys was hunted and killed, Jesse, and we didn't burn down a single building. We came together, 100,000 plus strong, millions around the world, and sang worship songs, as you said. And then the pinnacle of the Christian life is forgiveness. Romans 5:3 says that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Not after we stopped sinning, while we were still sinners. And then Ephesians 4:32 says that we are to forgive our enemies as Christ has forgiven us. This is the pinnacle of the Christian life. It's the greatest Christian witness that anyone can give. It's impossible to do on your own. That's why it's so great. You cannot, no human can do what Erica Kirk did on her own and forgive the assassin of her husband. No human can do that. It is only the Holy Spirit. It is only a supernatural event. And for that to be on display for millions of people to show the world that's who we are and that's who Jesus is, that is as good as it gets. Keep going down this road, conservatives, and amazing things will happen for this country.
Are you saying, is she saying that this killer doesn't deserve to be punished?
Yeah, Jesse, I'm not even kidding. As soon as I finished that, I was like, oh, I hope we're not done. I'm glad we got another minute here. So this is such a common error.
Take your
forgiveness
time.
Forgiveness does not mean forgetfulness. We're not here to forget what happened, by no means. You forgive. She forgives for her own sanity, her own soul's sake. She knows that she can't go on her life filled with that resentment that Charlie spoke so much against on college campuses. She had to forgive, otherwise she would be stewing in this venom for the rest of her life. It would destroy her life. It would destroy her wonderful children's lives. It would destroy the movement. It would be a horrible everyday victory for darkness. She had to forgive for her own sake. But that's the widow. The state has a proper Romans 13 role to wield the sword in the name of justice. So Erica forgives in the name of grace and Jesus, she forgives. Stephen Miller wields the sword. And then God gives the ultimate eternal justice. He'll sort all that out in the end. But in the meantime, we have an earthly government that is ordained by God to praise good and punish evil. And that's exactly what Stephen Miller, led by the rest of those amazing Christians that are running our government. This is Christian nationalism on full display, and I love it. They are going to wield the sword of justice because God is a God that is just.
Politics by Faith is the name of the podcast. Mike, as always, brother, I love you. Appreciate you. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And the last number I saw before we started the show tonight was that 100 million people, 100 million people watched the Charlie Kirk Memorial. We talked about that at the very beginning of the show, of course. But I want you to digest something. 100 million people taking in a memorial, and Turning Point USA, the Kirk family and everybody, turned his memorial into a gigantic worship service honoring a martyr. And if you missed it, I really want to encourage you, again, just like I did in the opening of the show, to watch it. It was, I don't know that I've ever used these words before, powerful in a way that was palpable. Moments like this.
Every voice, every hand, you take it away. So I throw up my hand, praise you again. I know it's not much, nothing else. So I throw up my head, praise you again and again. All that I have is a hallelujah, hallelujah. And I know it's not.
That's awesome. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.